Welcome to the Home Team Podcast. Steve Carter here. I'm here with my good friends Sam Acho, Trey Burton, and the Home Team exists to be and talk about the intersection of faith and sports, family and culture. And man, there's a lot. There is a lot going on this week in sports. Sam, I'm just going to start just from the gate. I'm going to give you creative license. Where do you want to go today? What do you want to talk about? There's got to be some stuff that's stirring inside of you. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, the thing I'm most excited, and welcome back, Steve. Welcome back, Trey. Trey's been on like a three-month hiatus.
I'm back.
Oh, man. But, bro, so while y'all were gone, your boy was watching the Olympics. And, like, it was – I don't know why. I've never been – the last five years ago and then – 3 years before that, and like the last three, four, however many Olympics, I hadn't really paid too much attention. And I think because I was usually, well, partly every summer, my family and I would go to Nigeria and we do medical missions trips. So usually for part of the Olympics, I'm on a plane and overseas with like no service, no TV, whatever. So that's part of it. And then I think another piece is I just didn't care that much for whatever reason. I wasn't as invested. Maybe I was focused on football or whatever. This year, I was so not even dialed in, but just excited to watch. And mind you, I got a couple friends, a friend of mine named Mallory, who's a Paralympic swimmer who made the Olympic team. I got another friend of mine named Mo, who's a sprinter who didn't make the team, but she ran PRs. It was amazing to watch these athletes put in work, hammer throw, javelin, 400, 400 hurdles, 200. And so that was fun to watch. And then the second piece is I have the place where we live in Chicago, there's this like pond in the middle of this complex. And there's like a track in so many ways, like a place you can walk around.
That big lake, Lake Michigan. Do you call that a pond? That's weird.
Tiny little pond over the pond. And so there's this track. There's like this walking thing. It's probably about 400 meters, right? And so, you know, my wife was like, hey, maybe you should start running more, get in better shape. I was like, all right, cool. So I tried to run just a lap, bro, a lap. And to time it, my knees were hurting. I think I was at like 3 minutes. I was like, dude, what am I doing? That's like, then I got down to maybe a minute and a half or something like that. And like these people, and I feel like I'm an athlete. And these people run it in like 40 something seconds, 50 seconds. And I was giving it my all. And so anyways, we watched these things and we're like, oh, you should have won. You're not that fast. Or look at that guy in the back. But then you go and try and do it and you're like, wait, what? These athletes are phenomenal. And so, and obviously shout out to Simone Biles, who was just doing GOAT things, right? Greatest of all time. But that's my thing. If there's one thing that stood out to me this last little week, it's been how phenomenal the athletes' performances are at the Olympics.
I would probably say the worst possible situation is coming in fourth place in a close race. There are so many times, I mean, the majority of the races were competitive. And I'm sitting there watching and I'm seeing these guys and these ladies, you know, running as fast as possible. I couldn't believe how fast some of these people are running. And then, damn, third and fourth are like neck and neck, right? And then they both cross the line basically at the same time. And I'm thinking to myself, like, bro, fourth place ain't going to the Olympics, you know? And like how heartbreaking that must be to train, because it's a different sport. Like we don't really understand it, you know, to a degree playing, you know, football and basketball. They only really compete once every 4 years for that goal that they're really trying to, or that gold medal, you know, that they're really trying to get. But bro, I was so surprised in the long distance races, like the 5,000 and the 10,000, dude. That last 400 meters, these people are rolling, dude. And I'm thinking to myself, like, bro, if I ran that, I've been running a little more distance stuff, you know, mile stuff and everything like that, just to stay in shape. But bro, like the last lap and you're running like that, goodness, man, these people are moving. It's just so impressive.
For both of you, what are your favorite events?
Simone.
Simone is my favorite event.
Whatever she does, you know what I mean?
No, but for me, like, I don't know. Like, I love watching discus and shot put because that's what I did back in high school. And I would, you know, not to brag, I hold the school record for shot put. Not a big deal. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. 57, 9.5, just whatever. there's like 80 people in my graduating class, but still got the school record. And so I watched some of these people throw the shot put. And I was like, bro, they're throwing it like 70, 80 feet. And the thing is heavier, you know, 76, 70 feet for the heavier shot put.
It's heavier.
Yeah. In high school, it was like maybe 12 pounds. And like my track athletes listening are going to be like, Sam, come on. But now it's like 16, you know, or maybe high school might have even been less, you know. And then watching them throw the discus, which is also heavier, watching that thing fly. So those are great. But the 400 meter race, for whatever reason, I like that because I think I have a better understanding of how difficult it is. Like watching the women run that 400, like, and even the 400 hurdles, Sydney McGaughlin, watching her and all those athletes run. There's another one woman named Alila Muhammad. I was like, y'all are phenomenal athletes, number one. And then also it was really cool for me. And I think for us and some of the listeners, so many of these athletes were giving glory to God at the end. Like that was one of the coolest things. Like, it was like, bro, like God gave me these abilities and I'm just trying to honor him with my abilities. And it wasn't a thing like, I know in football, sometimes you score a touchdown, you point to the sky or, you know what I mean? Or it's like, it wasn't one of those. It was like, I've been training for years, for my whole life, since middle school or a little kid, I said I wanted to go to the Olympics. And then God gave me the ability and I put in the work and God honored my work. All hard work leads to profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. And God honored the work that I put in and he gave me the ability and I want to maximize it. Like that's what stood out the most to me. Watching them run, obviously seeing them get interviewed right after, being like, you know, it's like, bro, give them some time to breathe. But then seeing so many of these athletes give glory to God.
You know, what's crazy though, is, I mean, to watch the pressure that has been on Simone Biles. I mean, just, I mean, when you think about how great she is, and it feels like every exercise, the floor exercise, her, you know, on the beam, like, I mean, like just everything that she is doing, it's like, there's gotta be a moment that she falters and she doesn't. It's like, she just keeps elevating the sport and elevating her own performance, which I just think is just from the mentality, the mindset. I mean, it's just, I feel like this whole year, like when she's performing a, you know, a move that, you know, no woman has ever done, and they're trying to like, hey, you can't do that anymore. And she's like, okay. And then just raises it again. Like she just, her abilities, to be able to say we were actually able to watch her, man, what a gift that is. The other thing I'd say is, I've been feeling for where it's tough is like, you know, so for some of these sprinters, you know, you're 18 years old, you're 21 years old, you're 23 years old. Fast forward 4 years, you're 27, or if you're 26, you're 30. You probably lost a step. And there was like a lot of talk that wouldn't even Tokyo happen. And so like, can you like just having that experience where you have trained and you were the one, like you were your country's hope to win a gold medal. And you actually, this was going to ride, like this was going to happen. And now it's like, you can't go and you're not going to get like another chance because you're probably not going to be able to keep this pace or this speed or this ability going in for. So I don't know. I think there was that. But then last thing I'd say is I think COVID also made me go, not just certain sports. Like I love hearing you talk about like the long distance run, Trey, just because like, I feel like I think I took the Olympics for granted, pre COVID. And I think now it's like, dude, I'm just like soaking it up. Like I'm just, you know, at an airport, I'm like watching as much as I can. Like, I wanted to see it all, celebrate it all. Cause, man, it's a real privilege to kind of like be able to watch it after having a year where we didn't get a chance to watch it at all. It feels like.
And it was cool too. Yeah.
The 100 for sure is one of the best events to watch. I like the 4x1 personally, 4x1 or what 4x2, just because there's so many people on the track and there's so much that can happen and so much that can go on. I ran the 4x1 in high school, and to be like Sam, I'll plug myself here for a second.
You had one dude on that 4x100 team, Jeff. No, who's the deal. Guy?
No, yeah,
that guy ran the fastest 40 ever, bro.
Third fastest 40 in the history of the combine. If he could hand the baton to himself four different times, he would have been by far the best 4x1 team ever. He'd probably be in the Olympics right now. Dree Archer, he played for the Steelers. Yes. He got drafted by the Steelers, I think, in the fourth round or something like that. He was the first guy out of my high school. Dude, he could run. First guy from my high school that ever got drafted. But yeah, so 4x1 and 4x2 are great events as well.
Yeah, I love your point, Steve, about the timing and it being difficult. But man, there's a young lady who went to my college called Kendra Chambers. Her name is Kendra Chambers, and she ran track in college. And you know, obviously Texas is, you know, sure, Michigan and Florida, but when it comes to Texas and track, I mean, I'm just saying. And so. And she, you know, she was good, but she didn't, I mean, it wasn't like she was like the best in our college, right? Well, fast forward 10 or so years later, and all of a sudden she's making the Olympic trials. And she just tells this whole story of how, like, not only have people counted her out, but like, she didn't know if she was going to ever be able to have an opportunity and didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden she pops back up and it's like, I'm here. And she didn't make the final, she didn't make it to Tokyo. But just seeing that, almost a story of redemption of like, yes, like it can still happen, even if you're out of your quote unquote prime. That was what was cool to me. Sarah Hall, she runs a 5K and a 10K. And she was a year older, maybe 38 years old. And we have a mutual acquaintance. I don't know her personally, but having a year off because of COVID. And it's supposed to be your year and you're already a year older. And so she had the mentality, at least in some of the posts, of like, hey, COVID helped me. That year off gave me another chance to refresh my body. But I also wonder sometimes mentally if you have to say that to yourself to get ready for whatever it is. You know, like when I broke my leg, people say, and I broke my fibula in 2013 playing for the Arizona Cardinals. And I heard some doctors say, well, hey, if there's any bone to break, your fibula is the bone to break. It's a non-weight bearing bone. It heals stronger. You're going to come back stronger. So I was telling myself all these things, but I know good and well, I still got some residual effects from that. And so I just wonder how often people tell themselves things to believe them, to help them play or run or compete at a higher level, even when they may not be true. And then you can take that out of sports in life. I wonder how often we do that versus not.
Oh man, the Jedi mind trick, the way that we Jedi mind trick ourselves all the time, man. I remember when I went to a basketball camp, and I had to play Baron Davis. And Baron, I mean,
How'd that go, by the way?
Oh, bro. He destroyed me. Like, yeah, I was on skates. Like, I think he went for 38. And I think
you didn't fall down, did you?
No, I did not fall down. I did not fall. He crossed me over, but I did not fall down. He went for like 38 or something. And, you know, there's college coaches everywhere. But like, I went for like 6 or 7. Like
strong
6 or 7, right? Exactly. You know, but he had already signed with UCLA. So then I'm like, I'm going against some dude. I'm like, bro, I scored 7 points on Baron Davis. I'm going to kill this guy. Like when I'm like back the next year as like a senior in high school, like I'd use anything that would give me a leg up or mentally make me believe that I was better. I mean, I think guys do this all the time. Like right now, I'll throw one out for you right now. Sam, you know, out of the top 20 colleges that have Olympic representation, I mean, Texas, I mean, you're a diving school. That's what you're known as. You're a diving school. You're a fantastic diving school. You're number 15.
Best in the world.
Best
in the world. Yeah. Swimming and diving.
But you've produced the 15th most out of colleges athletes that literally have gone to represent the United States of America. Trey, you're not actually even in the top 20. Florida's nowhere to be found. It was just crazy. You think that there would be more? It's just not there. But the University of Michigan, we're number 7 out after, you know, the Yales, the Harvards, the Stanfords, the Berkeleys, the UCLAs, and the USCs. We're number 7. So I use this right now to make me believe I'm better. And that's, that works. That works for me. See? So just,
it makes you sleep at night. It's fine.
Makes you sleep. It makes you feel okay. So
I'll say this, and kind of as we kind of wrap up on the Olympics piece, Steve, you did make a really good point of, I think we have been taking so many things, not just the Olympics, but so many things for granted. Like track athletes, every day matters. Every week matters. Every year matters. And people finish 1 year and say, okay, here's my training regimen for the next 4 years. People plan lives, plan having kids, marriages around this one event. Like the amount of focus and attention and all these things. And it's so easy, even a trace point, for us to blow it off. And it's like, oh man, they got fourth place or whatever, you know. But man, like going back to Simone Biles, like what she's able to do on in gymnastics on that floor, like majestic. What some of these track athletes are able to do. I mean, it's phenomenal and great, but I'm thinking of the 4 years of training and the focus he did. I mean, so many of the athletes, you heard them say, well, I got this new coach and this new coach had this technique and I trusted it. You know what I mean? So it's like, hey, like I will do whatever it takes, change coach, move cities. I got friends who have moved cities to go and train somewhere. Change coach, move cities, delay marriages, have kids later in order to reach this goal. And then what happens when you don't reach it? Another friend of mine, her name is Simone Charlie. She plays soccer for the Portland Thorn, but she was an Olympic, she was a track athlete before and used to run. And she was at the Olympic trials 4 or 5 years ago and didn't make it and was devastated, devastated. And she happened to go back to the trials and watch it. And she had this full circle moment of saying, hey, like some of these people who don't make it, like you may never get a chance again. Mm-hmm. You may never get an opportunity, but closure can still happen. Like in Simone's case, she's not running track anymore, but now she's playing soccer and doing this. You know what I mean? Like I remember she said like, she never thought she'd be able to see watch an Olympics again and feel whole. And now all of a sudden she feels whole. So for me, like even knowing that whether you're a track athlete who didn't make it or there's some goal or dream or wish that you had that maybe got delayed from COVID or delayed for whatever reason, knowing that closure, even though it looks different for a lot of people, knowing that it still happens brings me hope. Steve, if I can ask you once again, we're listening to the Home Team podcast, changing subjects a little bit. What does closure look like? Like what is, like so many people want closure. And I mean, I know you've gone through journeys of, you know, healing, redemption and with your dad and with church stuff, like it's different for everybody. Like what does that actually look like for you or even for us? Can you like kind of walk us through that?
That's a great question. I mean, I think for us, like I'm a big believer in that you have to mark moments. Like you have to signify like this moment is over. And it's hard to be someone who's living in two different places. For instance, you know, it's like when we, and you've probably all had these moments that when you're on the field and you're not actually present, you're thinking about the past play. You know what I mean? Like you've not been able to end something. You can't be present somewhere else. So like, you know, for me, I think this is why we do funerals. This is why we do moments to memorialize someone that we've lost. The Hebrew people have a whole process. They call it sitting Shiva for 30 days. They don't even just say anything. You just go sit. And again, it's just trying. And it's a whole year long process of actually learning how to grieve and grieve well. So for me, I think there comes to a point where, I think I thought sometimes it's linear. That's like, okay, I'm done with that. Now I moved on to college. Then I'm done with college. I move on to that. I think, but it's crazy is pain often just almost is a little bit more like ping pong. Like sometimes you've experienced some sense of pain or loss or betrayal, and you'll just be going through, and maybe you've moved on to the next reality or the next place or the next opportunity. And somebody will say something that you're like, oh man, that brings me right back. It reminds me of this organization or this institution or this person or my lack of trust. And so I think the constant work for the believer, the constant work for the human is literally to go, hey, is there anything that's in my life that is preventing me from actually entering into the next season well? So if you think about the Hebrew scriptures, you had Egypt, the desert, the promised land. And they were like significant moments that were like these kind of breakthrough moments that got them into the next place, into the desert, crossing the Red Sea. You know, you have like this sense of like Jericho, you have this kind of movement. And it was also crossing over a river, the Jordan, to get into the promised land. So there's this sense of like, you've like closed the door on that. There's like a body of water that separates. I think part of closure is finding what are those actions or unique steps or some kind of communal practice that can help you say, thank you for what I've been able to experience, and how now can I take what I needed to learn and move to the next? So my family, we've done a few different ways of that, but that's important for us, is having a healthy mindset on closure.
Trey, I'm gonna ask you the same question. Why I'm asking you is because I know you have a different personality. We were talking about this before we hit record, like, you don't usually get mad at things, super low key, super even keel. You know what I mean? And I know me, I'm like eccentric, like up and down and left and right. But what does that process look like for you when it comes to closure or even like seasons of life?
Yeah, no, I would say that's the number one thing I took out of what Steve just said. And thanks for sharing that, Steve. I mean, that's great stuff. Just recognizing that there's different seasons and there's different times for certain things. You know, I am very black and white, you know, like there's not really much gray for me. And so like when one thing is over, like, boom, it's over and move on to the next thing. And so like another thing that Steve said that I thought was great too, is like moving forward, like you have to, life continues to go on and there's other purposes. There's other things that need to be done in your lifetime. And there's other plans, you know, that are there. And so like the seasons, for sure, recognizing seasons, and it does suck. I mean, let's be honest, changing seasons and going into uncomfortable situations and things you're not used to. And but then also you got to realize that, like, man, there's something else. Like, what else? What else is there? I'm more of like, what's next? You know, how do we continue to go and move forward instead of dwelling on what's happening in the past, regardless of what it, you know, may be? How can we get over that hump and move forward into the next season? So that's, I'm always thinking of that, you know, what's the next season? How do we, and I should be where my feet are more often, but just more of like, boom, let's go, keep moving. What's next?
You know, what's interesting is there's a great TED talk, but a great, great like thinker, and I'm forgetting the name, but they gave this talk where they talked about the difference between moving on and moving forward. And so like the way that you just even just phrased that, Trey, about how to move forward, almost like kind of focused in on what's next, focused in. It's just like, it's such a healthier way. Oftentimes people are like, I just want to move on from that. I don't ever want to like think about, you know, that experience. It was so bad. But it's not like you can actually learn. And oftentimes when you have like a move on mentality, you repeat the same mistakes. Yeah. But like moving forward is kind of going, oh, I understood what got me here. I mean, that's, I think, again, one of the things about being an athlete is you know what it's like to actually kind of train, show up early, the discipline of what you put in your body, all of the stuff and what you do, that's transferable over to another career. That's transferable, that kind of dedication. Now, maybe not the kind of energy of hitting someone or being in pads or locker room kind of stuff. But the idea of being so focused, that's transferable. And the people who seem to move forward well are knowing how to transfer like what got them there, taking the best parts of that, that can help them kind of enter into the next kind of stage of their career or the next kind of opportunity that's put before them. So
we, 2 years ago, we lost my sister-in-law. you know, she was, you know, she was murdered, and out of nowhere, and like what's going on and all these things. Hadn't experienced a ton of loss in our, and at least in my family. And it was just really, really hard for a lot of us. And we were at the funeral that my dad's a pastor, does business. He's a marriage counselor as well, a therapist, psychologist, licensed psychologist. And one of the friends of my sister-in-law went up to speak, and she said, I refuse to believe this. Like, I refuse to believe that this is true. I'm not going to believe it. My initial response was twofold. It was like, man, like, this is hard. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of her best friends, you know? The other response was like, I mean, whether you refuse to believe it or not, it's true. Like, whether you accept it, she said, I refuse to accept this. That's what it was. I refuse to accept. But I'm like, whether you accept it or not, it's true. And my dad went up and spoke. And I think we talked afterwards, my dad and I, and we just came from this psychology standpoint. And he was like, man, sooner or later, people have to come to terms with reality, as sad and as hard as it might be. This is from the psychology standpoint, because if you refuse to accept something, you can never heal from it. You can never heal from it. I remember, and I know we're going to talk about this in a second, the Suns, right? Phoenix Suns, everybody's happy that they're in the, you know, NBA finals. I wasn't happy. I wasn't cheering the Suns on. I wasn't cheering very many Phoenix teams on, because I played with the Cardinals and the Arizona Cardinals, right? Lived in Phoenix for 4 years. And the story that I told myself was, and mind you, listen to the words, right? The story that I told myself was, well, they released me after 4 years. They didn't want me. So I went somewhere else. And so I don't like this team in the city, right? Bad blood, harboring things. And then I was talking to my wife one day, because we were watching the game, and she's like, who do you want to win? I'm like, man, anybody but the Suns. And it's, I mean, we got probably a lot of Phoenix Suns fans on here. So, you know, just, this is why, this is before I'm made new now, but she said, why don't you want them? And I said, you remember they released me. And she's like, dude, they didn't release you. So what do you mean? She said, your contract expired. You had a 4-year contract. That season of life was over. The contract expired. A new team picked you up. So all this kind of bad blood that you've been harboring for this team or this person or whatever, it's actually not true. So like, you need to close that chapter, and better yet, celebrate that. Like, they wanted you for the entire 4-year contract. Then a new team came, and a new city, and a new season. And so, like, and even now, seasons of life, right? I'm transitioning out of football. And so often it's like, I don't want to ever make a retirement announcement or whatever. And like, even as we're talking now, as Steve listening to you kind of pastor us through this, and Trey, you sharing your perspective about looking forward, it's like, dude, whenever I do make that announcement, like, there's a lot to celebrate. Like, a lot of people to thank, as opposed to, oh, I know, I can't believe I'm not. No, like, seasons. Life's about seasons.
Yeah. You know, what's amazing is, do you remember watching The Last Dance? And there's a whole, I think it might have been episode one towards the end, but they talked about how Jordan would construct and make up stories. Like, you know, yeah, where he, you know, BJ Armstrong, like, Jordan would basically be like, oh, when he was with the Hornets, BJ should know better. He shouldn't have said that. And like, literally, Jordan then would go get so angry and then use, and the thing about Jordan, he was able to channel all that anger towards his opponent. You know, rattles off 31, 33 points in the next few games. Like, this guy constructed narratives that would serve him. The crazy piece of it, though, is we construct narratives all the time. We're constructing storylines and plot lines. And I love, you know, your wife and Ngozi, like, just saying, hey, that's a made up story. You just created a made up story that now is like affecting your ability to even celebrate Chris Paul and Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, you know, and again, we all do this. We do this with people. We do this with schools. We can construct a story. But then if we actually were to interrogate that and really find what's the genesis of that, it's fascinating. Fascinating. Okay, real quick.
But that's why it's important to have someone to be able to talk to and, you know, say like what you're feeling, like honestly, you know, without having to hold back. Cause there's a lot of times, I mean, shoot, I don't know about y'all, but for me, like there'll still be times where like I'll talk about stuff, but I'll hold back, you know, some of the bigger issues or whatever really what's really going on. But like if Sam didn't have his wife, I mean, I'm sure he probably would still imagine or be telling himself that about the city of Phoenix. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
No, you're so right, dude. You're so right. And I know, Steve, you got a thing you want to add, but dude, I'll let Steve you go first. But Trey, I got a story for that, you know, because you're right.
Well, that's just what great marriages and great friendships are, is they're a mirror to our beauty and brokenness. So they reflect back like, hey, I don't think you see yourself really appropriately right here or are seeing this story appropriately. Let me just reflect back and be like, dude, your contract was up. They did not release you, you know, or, hey, why are you letting them off the hook? They totally did not hold their end of the bargain. They said one thing and they released you. Like there's ways that where there's almost a holy sense of frustration and there's a sense of, getting in touch with reality. The one piece though I would say is in the stages of getting closure and grieving well, you will always find that denial is the first stage. Something mm-hmm. happens and everything inside you doesn't, you have to deny it. You know, like it's why like, I can't believe this is happening. I can't like what? I can't like the act of denial is they're discovering the first stage of the process of moving forward in the process of closure, because you have to come to grips of how fragile it all is. You didn't think it was going to go this way. Like, it's just like, oh my goodness, I'm not fully in control. But if they're finding that often denial is that first stage. So, hey, real quick though, this is the one thing though. I know we were talking about at the Olympics. This might be a good little segue, but do you know how much you make as an Olympic athlete? Like if you win a gold medal,
probably like $1,000.
Close. I mean, you're Simone Biles, or like you win a gold medal and you're like a rower. You make the same amount of money, $37,500. For a gold. $22,000 for a silver, and then I think it's like 19 or something for a bronze. So like legitimately, like you're there. This, which is a great segue to NCAA for me, but like just the reality of, man, these people, when you talk about that training and that just busting it and going for it, it's pretty wild that to do it just for what hangs around your neck. And maybe an endorsement deal here or there, because some of them have done well. But like legitimately, it's not a ton of money.
How do they make that work? I don't understand. That has to stretch 4 years, right? I mean, obviously that's not all they're getting. They probably have another job, I would imagine.
Well, the sponsorships too, right? So like Nike might sponsor athletes. So one of my friends, she runs track. Nike, she's sponsored now by Adidas. And so she gets paid based off if she wins a meet, she gets X amount. Maybe
but they can't sponsor everybody though.
Exactly. Exactly. Which takes us to the name, image, and likeness for the NCAA. Because for those who don't know, the NCAA reluctantly, if I could just throw that in there, they finally agreed to say, okay, players can be paid for their name, their image, their likeness. And that brought us to the question of obviously the Olympics, like, okay, there's some Olympians who are college athletes. Now they're declaring going pro who can get paid, but now college football, which Trey, you and I have that background. Steve, you got the basketball background. Yes, we want to ask the question, like, who do we think would have gotten paid the most? But also, like, would that change anything for you, Trey? Like, if you were playing right now and this new kind of rule came out, name, image, likeness. Like, I've seen some of my friends who were tweeting out, hey, I can get paid now. So any company that wants to endorse me, here's my info. Or, like, what would your mindset be if this rule was coming out and you were still a collegiate athlete?
Well, I think what people have to realize is not everybody's going to get paid. There's not many people that are actually going to get paid. And I also think what people got to realize is that it's not necessarily the best athlete on each team for each sport that's going to make the most money. I think people that are going to really make the most money are the YouTubers and the streamers and the people that do, like, I remember the guy, the kicker for UCF had a YouTube channel and he was making good money, and the NCAA like called him into the team office and was like, you have to make a decision within the next 5 minutes. Are you going to keep doing YouTube or are you going to leave and not be on scholarship? And so I think what schools are worried about are like the walk-ons that are going to make way more money than the actual athletes, the starters are going to make, because they have a solidified YouTube channel or they, you know, can play Xbox or PlayStation. And so I don't think as many people are going to get paid that think they're going to get paid. But no, for me, it wouldn't have made a difference school wise. I mean, I'm always going to go to the best university possible, and that's why I went to Florida.
Well, no, and I don't even mean school wise. Like, I know I'm not talking like what school you go to, but I'm saying like when you're playing, are you like, would you be like, hey, company X, right? And I'm asking this even personally. Like, I was a marketing major. Like, I had this idea of like, man, what if you could match up athletes with brands or whatever? Like, for you, like, you have this Essentia water kind of thing where like this company, they sent you water, right? Would you be trying to find, do you think that college athletes should be trying to find as many people to endorse them as possible? Should they hire somebody to do that for them? Should they get agents? Like, what needs to happen now?
Well, they're going to have to start paying taxes on this stuff, I would imagine. And I know for me in college, I had no clue. And I knew what a 7% sales tax was, but I didn't know anything about what a state income tax was or a federal income tax was. So, I mean, yeah, I think universities have to do a phenomenal job, and I don't think they are, of setting these guys up for success or these women up for success for stuff that the repercussions that happen when you actually are getting paid, you know, money, and the things that happen when you have to go through those and the different taxes you have to pay. And so I think the first couple of years is going to be kind of shaky. But I know, like, for me, for example, like, I've reached out to my university and like let them know, like, dude, there's a lot of things that you guys need to do in order to help these guys or these women realize, first of all, what to do with their money. And then also, you know, legally what needs to happen from a tax standpoint, because that's where people can get messed up, is if they don't start paying taxes. Because I know for sure I definitely would not have been paying taxes if I was in college, because I had no clue what it was, you know.
What are some of those things?
What
you said, like you said, you reach out to the school, right? Hey, University of Florida. Hey, athletic director. Hey, head coach. Whatever. Y'all got to do. Here's what you need to know as a guy who played at this school and who went to national championships and all these. I mean, like, what are some of those things?
You need to figure out a way to get these kids not to blow their money. They need to save their money and hold on to their money and realize that it's not going to last forever. I mean, I know when I was in college, like the sense of money. Because you don't have much at all. And, you know, even $1,000 goes, I mean, how long could you make $1,000 stretch in college, bro? I mean, a long, long, long time. And so I think there needs to be advisors. I think they need to figure out a way to set up like a savings plan, for the future for these guys or any these girls. I'm saying guys, I'm just speaking in general, but, there just needs to be more money, wisdom. I know that's a bad way to say it, but money management wisdom for these athletes, because I don't think, at least I'm speaking from my own experience, I did not know anything about money. I just knew I was getting, you know, a monthly scholarship check, and then you get your Pell Grant. That's really all the money you get. And it might be $5,000 total in a whole year. And how do I stretch that out, you know, throughout the whole year? And now if these people are going to be making more than that, I think, I'll go on record, I don't think athletes should get paid. I think they should save that money for when they're done playing in college as like a fund for them to dip into and to get paid out over a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 year span. Because I know when my last game was up at the University of Florida, I didn't know if I was going to get drafted. I didn't know if I was going to play in the NFL. Like, I had honestly no clue. And I remember sitting there looking at my wife, first year of marriage, like, all right, what's next? Cause that scholarship check is done, you know, after this, that season's over, that's your fourth year, you're done. Your lease is up for your apartment, you know, like, what do I do next? So instead of these people getting paid while they're in college, I think there should be, everything they make should go into a bank account, basically, for, you know, in layman terms, everything they make should go in a bank account. And when they're done playing their last collegiate game, whether they leave early or they don't leave early, whatever, regardless, now they can access that, or they can use that money for the future to kind of jumpstart them into their next career, to a degree. And that, obviously, this is just, you know, the 3,000 feet looking at this, to a degree. I have a lot more thoughts on it, but I don't think they should be getting, you know, tons of money while they're in college. I do think they should make money, but I don't think it should be, you know, specifically while they're just in college.
You know, what's crazy too is, you know, if you think about this, I think about Desmond Howard, you know, scores that touchdown and then he literally does the Heisman pose. I mean, and it was just so awesome. You know, you think about Johnny Manziel, just, you know, a little bit of dollars, like there was this sense of, I think we think just jerseys as a little bit of the licensing and like the money that they'll make. But mm-hmm. like now if I can start to create some sense of likeness in the, oh, this athlete, this wide receiver, you know, even looking at the guy from the fan for the Suns who wrote Suns in Four, and now there's shirts of dudes wearing Suns in Four shirts everywhere of him basically punching a guy and saying Suns in Four. That, I don't know if that dude's making any money, but like now that you'd have an institution to be able to take a Desmond Howard stance of the Heisman, turn that into a shirt that now he's making money. Like, I think, man, this is going to be a fascinating piece of what some athlete might try and do, you know, like to try and gain a little, like find their own flex move, find their own kind of stance in the end zone, some miracle catch, you know, that I think the school then is going to try and turn into a shirt that some dude might make one random play and make a killing. And what's that going to do in the locker room? It's like the punter, you know, if like, you know, make some play and now they're making shirts and he's got $37,000 straight cash. And like the rest of the team's like, I don't have that. So it's that variation of who's making what, I think is going to be interesting too.
Yeah. I love, and this is honestly a good place to kind of wrap up, cause I never thought, Trey, about the way what you just proposed. The idea you just said of, yeah, I think college athletes should get paid, but I think it should go into a savings account for their future. You're 18, you're 17, 18, 19. You don't learn about money. You don't learn about taxes in school. You don't learn about any of that. You don't learn about how this stuff works, savings, checking, you know. And then even going to the NFL, I know my first couple of years, as I'm 22, 23, 24, making a lot of money, but still trying to figure it out. Mm-hmm. That's a good, and I mean, as people are listening, I know we're going to close here in a second, but I think we should, this ruling just came out. And I know some people are listening. I don't care so much about college football. Other people love college football. I take some time and ponder and think and say, and maybe even propose an idea. You know, Trey got some connections. He's talking to people, right? We got some connects. So if y'all got some ideas, like propose them, think it through, hit us up at the home team on social and let us know what you're thinking. Cause even Trey, to your point, I think that'd be a great idea, but also I'm thinking, okay, well, imagine all the people that would say, no, we want that money now. Not the players, sure. Not even the players. That. Like I'm saying, like their family, let's say it's a family member, yeah, or somebody else who's like, no, we want it now.
Yeah.
And then the pushback that would come from that.
My only argument is just you need to, when you first start getting money, the best possible you can, you need to start having good habits. And you don't really realize that when you're just getting thrown a good amount of money. Cause I mean, look how many people in the NFL, and I can only speak to the NFL because, you know, I've played in it, but like how many guys do I know that were first round draft picks that were given, you know, a dumb amount of money. And then after 3 or 4 years, they have to keep playing or else they're going to run out of money because they weren't fruitful with their first couple million dollars, you know, cause you don't really realize you're not going to get paid millions of dollars over 50 years. You're getting paid millions of dollars really over 1 or 2 years and you have a 5-year contract, you know? And so,
and it's, Mark, and it's not even, it's cut in half, right?
You think, yeah, oh, it's cut in half. Know, yeah.
Taxes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's end with this. Trey, you brought this up earlier, right before we hit record. Who would be the highest paid college athlete?
I would say Johnny Manziel, just because of all the oil money they got out there at Texas A&M. Him or Vince Young. I mean, but they were paying Vince a lot before that he even this all came out, you know, so it's not really a big
deal.
Yeah, I would say Johnny Manziel or Vince Young. No one really cares about football up north, like in Michigan or Ohio State. So I would say somewhere definitely down in the South for sure. No question. At first I thought Tebow, but I think Johnny Manziel.
I'm going to say a guy like JJ Redick. I'm going to say somebody who you have to go 4 years, right? So some guy like basketball who's been there, like who can like be making money. I'm talking about I'm like the highest paid over like all the games that you'd have the chance to play. You've got 10, 13 like games that you're playing for college football. If you're out after your second year, you've played 26 games, depending if you can get run as a freshman. But I'm like college basketball, like if Zion would have stayed 4 years, you know what I mean? Like some I think there's I wonder if there's more in a different sport just with basketball, if there's an athlete there. But Johnny, I mean, he built they call it the Manziel building right next to the stadium.
Yeah, I just wonder, and I don't have a great answer to the question of who would get paid most, but I do have a great question to follow up to the question. I just wonder what the money will do. We had Sam Ponder, the amazing, coveted Sam Ponder, she would always say this phrase. She was one of the hosts of the home team. She said, follow the money. And I just wonder, we talked about it earlier, you know, you make an awesome play, and now in the locker room, people are doing the money signs. Like, hey, that's the next, you know, you're about to get paid off of that. I wonder how well the players will be able to handle it. And that's why, Trey, I respect you. You're saying, hey, man, I want to help these players handle it. I wish there were more people out there trying to help rather than people trying to get their cut.
Yeah, we just need healthy habits, bro, from the beginning. And if I hope these universities are teaching and preaching, and now that these kids have money, I know me, I didn't pay attention until I actually had money. I'm like, oh, damn, what am I going to do? How do I do this? You know, so I hope now that these guys have a chance to get money that we start practicing healthy habits, because there's too many stories of people blowing what they've made because they think they're going to continue to make that over, you know, multiple years. So that's my only argument. That's my only argument for paying these guys or women after they're done with college. I mean, they should get some, you know, while they're in college, but I think, man, it's tough more for success and more for the future and life after college, in my opinion.
Well, hey, I love that, Trey. I'd actually love to hear what you think. Let us know. Do you think we should give all the money right to them right away? Or do you think, you know, do you agree with Trey? Do you think that, hey, if they don't have the habits, put it in a bank account, let it grow some interest. Let us know.
Or do you think that some college athletes should not get paid? Because there are people that have, you know, say, why are we doing this, right? There's, you know, let us. Yeah. Like some people don't think this is a good thing at all. And that's okay.
Well, hey, Trey Burton's got to get onto the water. He's got to go fish. Someday, maybe
catch some fish, baby. Catch some fish, baby. Catch some fish. Got to reel them in. Hey, they're not going to catch themselves. I'll tell you that.
Hey, enjoy time with your puppy, Trey. Sam, I hope you continue to be a blessing. I love what you were able to do. Love the episode last week. Hey, everyone, thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you guys have a great, great day, and go blue.
Fish on.